Aloha, this is Catherine Cruz. Mahalo for joining us here on The Conversation, Hawaii Talks. It is Tuesday, September 8th. Schools and non-essential government services on Kauai and Oahu are shut down by Hurricane Lowell. We get an update on the situation on Kauai and Niihau from the mayor. We also learn about impacts here on Oahu, where winds took out power lines and closed roadways because of flooding. We also hear more about how our firefighters are being asked to do more and why training is key in disasters. Why a system upgrade to the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs is causing more delays and hurting, not helping businesses. And how ocean pollution is impacting some of our marine creatures, what the latest study tells us. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. Hurricane Lowell knocked out power to most of the Garden Isle overnight, as we just heard. Emergency management officials were expected to send up a helicopter to survey the damage from the storm. We have Mayor Derek Kawakami on the line to get the latest out in the field on the damage to roads in the areas hardest hit. Good morning, Mayor.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Well, you know, Mayor, I don't know. Do you know, were they able to get a helicopter up in the air to do an aerial assessment?
So right now, we are currently in our EOC, and what we would call the incident management team has broken out into their respective teams, and they're really trying to make sure that we are utilizing resources effectively. So they have not, to my knowledge, gone up in the air yet, but they will soon. They're figuring out logistics for that. But we do have ground crews deployed out there taking a look and assessing infrastructure damage. Highways are being cleared out. County roads are being cleaned. And that's really the big message of today, is although the Hurricane Lowell event has come and gone, the aftermath is now our number one priority as far as making sure that every person is accounted for, making sure that roads and highways are cleared. KIUC is working to restore power to, I believe, over 90% of their members. And then we're asking people to please try to conserve their resources, including water. Right now, we're asking people to take a very conservative approach to water usage because there are areas in our system that, of course, have lost power as well. And so we don't want to run into the risk of depressurizing the system, and that would lead to more complications. So take real quick showers. No need water the grass because it just rained. And just be very mindful about their water usage.
Yes, and I don't know if you've gotten the latest from KIUC, you know, about whether we're talking like major damage to the transmission lines or to the plants.
All I heard is transmission lines. I haven't heard anything about any plant damage, but I could be wrong. Reports are still coming in, and it's a challenge for our teams to get out and do a good assessment because we still have highways that are full of debris. You know, the traffic signals are out, so it slows things down a little, and it's going to be an ongoing recovery effort. And so we just appreciate everybody's patience and understanding while we get the work done. It was a real storm. I have to say there were some moments where it brought back memories of Hurricane Iniki, especially the sound that wind makes at that velocity. It's a different sound. And it brought back memories of over 30 years ago.
Yes, no, because that just stays under your skin. And the audio is pretty terrifying, you know, when you're indoors and you hear things crashing about. But, you know, Marin, I don't know if the winds have subsided over there, you know, and if that's part of the whole issue as to why you have not been able to get a helicopter up there, is you want people to be safe, you know. So, yeah, what can you tell us about the weather right now?
Oh, the weather is extremely hot and humid. I mean, there, and it's still windy. I would say that the wind is equivalent to, say, like your normal blustery spring, you know, windy day. But yeah, it's your typical tropical storm weather. It's going to be hot, humid, sticky, and pretty gross.
Yeah.
But we're going to get through this. You know, there's been some structures that we know that have been damaged. I saw some footage and got reports of, you know, Sheraton Poipu. And the storm surge that just, you know, inundated the lobby. I mean, Mother Nature is just relentless in regards to the power. I mean, it's hard to explain in words.
Well, you know, when they were forecasting waves of 20 to 30 feet, you know, in that area with it is not used to really high waves like that. I was very concerned.
Yeah, and you know, we have like just, I mean, there's stories out there that are happening that are just the most heartwarming. Of course, from a government perspective, we always worry about people's safety. But, you know, the response is, it has always been community-led and government-supported because, I mean, the residents of Cape Cod took it upon themselves to start clearing out the roads because, you know, they're closest to the impact. And while our crews are trying to make their way out there, they're proactively, you know, helping their community and helping us out. And you know, I really think that's the way government was designed to work best, is when you have a community that's engaged, that's willing to meet government halfway, and we have the ability to meet them halfway, work gets done. And it's refreshing for me to see as mayor. Of course, our attorneys are probably going to cringe when they hear this because we always worry about people getting hurt and liability, but I'll tell you, when things need to happen and things need to get done, the people out here and across Hawaii, I mean, I've seen it everywhere, in Kau, I mean, in Waialua, I mean, every single pocket in Hawaii, we have community members that are not going to wait, and they're going to make things happen. And I'm very thankful for them. Of course, I want to tell them in the same breath, please, please, please be careful, because we don't want people getting injured while we should be recovering.
Yes, you know, we do want to stress resiliency and community during these times. And we know that people will just kukua, you know. Someone needs help,
yeah.
They're going to help you. And then, you know, when the first responder crews can get access, you know, they will be there.
Oh, absolutely. And it still hasn't settled in yet. I'm sure it will a few hours, a few days. But this was a real storm. It was a big one. And, you know, island wide, we're going to get more reports on impacted areas. I know that the West Kauai communities have been impacted. We checked in with the Robinson family on Niihau. They are fine. But I know that communities in Anahola, the North Shore, of course, it was an island-wide event.
Well,
so,
you know,
we're in recovery mode.
I'm not sure, you know, what resources the Robinsons have there on Niihau, you know, I worried, you know, because I thought, oh, gosh, a lot of those homes are they look like they're wooden structures. And, you know, I was not sure of how strong those gusts would be and if they would withstand those kinds of crazy winds.
Oh, they have a fortified structure out there as well. And I think that's why the Robinsons had a high level of confidence. And then as far as warning, because Niihau was the most, was, you know, the part of our county that was the most at threat, we were able to call the Robinsons, let them know that we're going to sound the sirens on Niihau. They said, go ahead and do it. And so, you know, that was, I think that was a good call on our move to sound those sirens. And that's another thing, you know, the sirens are actually just one layer of a multi-layer toolkit to get community members informed of tricky, challenging situations. So we always tell people that sirens are not the most powerful tool. They may be the most obvious or the most familiar, but as far as getting notified, going to our County of Kauai website and signing up for those emergency notifications, in my opinion, it's worth its weight in gold, and it's much more effective than sirens.
Yes, and you know, the fact that you folks have been stressing, you know, pay attention to these storms, pay attention, and this is, you know, this hit is coming, you know, during the anniversary of Iniki, and so, yeah, bringing back some tough memories for so many.
Yeah, yeah, my wife included. You know, when I went through Hurricane Iniki, our house was relatively unscathed, but my wife's situation was a little different. So I knew already she was going to be a little more sensitive to this storm system. And so we've been also throughout the week informing people about the importance of taking care of their mental health. I mean, I must have gave out the Hawaii Cares 988 number just as much as I've been telling people to prepare for the storm, get your hurricane kits ready, because we tend to forget that mental health is just as, if not more important than physical health. And it's the one thing that I think, especially amongst young males, that goes by untreated. And so we're just trying to normalize and socialize the conversation that seeking mental health support is not a sign of weakness. And we just hope that the conversation comes out more in the open, because we know that this can be extremely stressful for everybody involved.
Yes, and public health and safety are so very important. And, you know, we don't like to hear about, you know, casualties and fatalities with any storm, but we know they do happen, and we just, you know, need to underscore that people take these warnings seriously. You know, that officials aren't doing this to scare people, that, you know, you just have to be cognizant of how things can change quickly.
Absolutely. You know, I think anybody that has been through a storm will be a little bit more sensitive to weather forecasts and understanding, you know, some of them don't come to fruition, but when they do, how lucky we are that we prepared for it. And I got to say, from my perspective, from an island-wide perspective, I am so grateful to our community for doing everything that they needed to do and above and beyond to get prepared. It has made our entire team's work just so much more manageable, because things could have gotten a lot worse if people really didn't pay attention to this one.
Yes, and we hope that your team stays safe out there as you folks you know, start to do the assessment. But thank you so much, Mayor, for your time this morning.
Thank you. And before I leave, you know, I just want to say that our hearts and our thoughts are still with the other families across the state that have been impacted by this very busy storm system. We haven't forgotten about the people and communities that have been impacted on Oahu, Maui, Hawaii Island, and just across the state. And, you know, even though we're separated by ocean, we're still all one, and we're connected by families and just by that spirit of aloha. So for all of those families that have gone through theirs, we've gotten ours, and we're going to work through it. And I want to thank all the mayors, you know, Governor Green, Major General Logan, and the entire crew, to our federal delegation, the nonprofits that have been reaching out, Kuhio Lewis, of course, Hawaii Community Foundation. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of other organizations that are reaching out to our team, but we definitely don't feel alone. I just feel so lucky, and just our hearts are overflowing with gratitude for the amount of love and support we've been receiving from across the state and across the nation. So thank you very much.
All right, and thank you again, Mayor. We have been hearing from Kauai Mayor Derek Kawakami. You can find storm coverage and resources on our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Aloha Air Cargo, offering 5 direct flights weekly from Honolulu to Seattle-Tacoma Airport. More information at AlohaAirCargo.com.
E-bikes are getting faster. Some go 35 miles an hour, even 50. There's one out there called the Revolution W that can go 80. And yet these vehicles are somehow still classified as regular bikes.
It's the loophole that I'm pissed off about because it's the source of the confusion. The wholesale use of a loophole to make these as widespread as normal bicycles.
That's on the next On Point.
Beginning this afternoon at 2.
Support for HPR comes from HMSA, celebrating nearly 90 years of dedication in supporting the health and well-being of the people of Hawaii with a commitment to caring for the community. Learn more at hmsa.com.
This morning, HPR's Mark Liddell joins us in studio. He's been tracking the impact of the storm here on Oahu through the holiday weekend. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. Great to be here.
Yes. And so, you know, we just heard from the mayor about the situation there on Kauai, but you were also tracking the news conferences that were happening this weekend, and you heard from the Weather Service.
Right. Yeah. So covered a little bit of what happened over the weekend. You know, one thing was obviously a lot of the offices, the state and county offices on Oahu, at least, were closed through today. And the mayor said, you know, he waited last minute until making that call. But as you can see, there are a lot of impacts to Oahu, too. But yeah, you're right. I did talk to the National Weather Service, some of the meteorologists. Now that Hurricane Lowell's kind of come and gone and the worst of it has hit. And, you know, basically they said kind of the worst had happened. They're predicting that it could have, you know, gone a little east and hit Niihau and Kauai more directly than they would have thought. And so that did happen. You know, you see all the videos of, you know, the gusts, the heavy rain, just things blowing around. There's all of this debris.
There's more rain forecast, too. Waves are still pretty big.
Right. Yeah. So that's still happening. So a lot of this is still ongoing. The National Weather Service, they'd mentioned that it's probably island-wide impacts to Niihau. And Mayor Derek Kawakami kind of mentioned that the Robinson family there is all right, but there's probably island-wide impacts there. A lot of the south portions of Kauai, like Puipu, Hanapepe, Waimea, were affected pretty hard too. The hurricane came pretty close. It was pretty bad, you know, and there's still some significant weather out there. Like you'd mentioned, the waves are still high. But we're sort of, the Lowell has kind of done its worst damage and is sort of on its way out. So as far as the National Weather Service goes, I spoke with meteorologist Patrick Blood. And mostly he wanted to tell people to remind them to stay safe. And now that everybody's cleaning and assessing the damage going on.
Checking in on your neighbors, making sure that, you know, you're not running generators in closed spaces, not going out and stepping over power lines, and be careful when clearing fallen trees, you know, be careful with the chainsaws and the axes and, you know, any potential flooding, staying away from any water of unknown depth, you know, all the basic, you know, statements that we put out there for the public after the storm passes, because there's power lines that are hanging there. We don't know if they're hot or not. You know, there's a lot of litter around. There's some loose earth. There's going to be folks out there getting on the roof. Be careful with, you know, doing that and checking damage in their house. So just making sure when you're out looking around, staying away from any type of down power lines, hazardous debris, flooded areas, you know, things like that.
Yeah. And so, you know, just a way to put it, one of the huge impacts on Kauai is the 33,000 people or so who are without power. That's like 90% of the customers on the island. So there is a lot that's going on there. And yeah, it does sound like it'll take some time to figure out exactly the extent of the damage. But it's clear that it was a lot.
Yeah. And then what did you find out about the damage here on Oahu?
Yeah. So, I mean, even before, I guess, I think the weekend, there was, you saw reporting, probably videos on the windward side. There was a lot of damage out there, a lot of flooding in various places. I think one of the hardest hit areas on Oahu, at least, was the Waianae coast. There is a ton of debris onto Farrington Highway, and there was a part of that was closed by the Department of Transportation between Lua Lua Street and Hakimo Road. And he said that the department, or I spoke with Representative Darius Kila, who represents the area, and he said that there's kind of this possibility that the road might open or the highway might open sometime this afternoon, but you know, that's sort of a moving target, he had mentioned. He also said that there are thousands of customers or HECO customers there without power, and some stores are as well. And you know, he had mentioned that the impacts of Lowell were sort of unlike what he's seen in the past, and that floodwaters reached houses thousands of feet inland.
I don't think people may understand the full gravity of impact until you start to see regular traffic consumed, because when I drove on Farrington, I have not seen in my lifetime the water come up the way that it did, because it went well into several thousand feet into neighborhoods that you would not think water would flow into. And so they're cleaning. And I think this is also a good reminder that as folks are cleaning their debris and whatnot, you need to document all the damages and things that you are taking care of, so that we can make sure that your whatever insurance provider you have or whatever assistance we provide, that it is documented. It is well documented.
And so obviously, there's a lot of damage on Oahu. And again, we're figuring out kind of what is going on. He's still driving around trying to figure out, you know, the extent of the damage and, you know, what people need out there. And, you know, looking forward, we're obviously in the middle of hurricane season, trying to figure out, you know, what else we might be looking forward to. I know a lot of people were, or a lot of the forecasts maybe last week were interested in Carina, which is now, as of at least Sunday, a post-tropical cyclone. And it doesn't sound like the National Weather Service is too worried about that. I think it's projected, or it doesn't have like any meaningful impact to Hawaii going forward. There's also a lot farther away, there's a post-tropical storm Marie, but it does not sound like that's something we have to worry about either. The National Weather Service, Patrick Blood, who I talked to, he did say there was an area of low pressure a few hundred miles southwest of Mexico. And it has a 70% chance of becoming a storm over the next week or so. We'll have to see what happens there. And we can't really predict about what's going on. But it does head to Hawaii if it becomes a sort of a tropical depression, and then we'll kind of do everything over again. We'll figure out how to get ready. But I think for the next week or so, it doesn't sound like that's something we have to worry about as far as storms go.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah. But people do need to pay attention to see,
of course,
what's happening. But thank you so much, Mark.
Thanks, Catherine.
We've been hearing from HPR's Mark Liddell. He's been tracking the impact of the storm here on Oahu through the holiday weekend.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Olson Trust, envisioning a Hawaii where its people are supported by the land, and the land is taken care of by its people. OlsonTrust.com.
Fiji in the South Pacific, the epitome of a tropical paradise. It's currently in the grips of an HIV crisis, with infection surging 14-fold over the past 5 years. I'm Marco Werman. We look into what's being done to control the virus. That plus all the day's top international headlines next time on The World.
Beginning this afternoon at 1.
Support for HPR comes from Haleakala Ranch, with a legacy of livestock, conservation, and land stewardship since 1888, working to restore, maintain, and preserve the open vistas and natural beauty of Maui. More at HaleakalaRanch.com.
This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. Today happens to be International Literacy Day, and for your backyard quiz, we're looking at literature and literacy throughout Hawaii's history, from memoirs like Hawaii's Story by Hawaii's Queen, written by Queen Liliuokalani, to modern favorites like The Descendants by Kawi Hart Hemmings. Hawaii has served as the setting for many books. Some of those works have also been adapted into films, like James A. Michener's Hawaii, which starred Julie Andrews and Richard Harris, or Bethany Hamilton's memoir, Soul Surfer. And Hawaii's love of reading has long been documented as well. Before the overthrow, the Hawaiian kingdom boasted a literacy rate of more than 90%, one of the highest in the 19th century. And when one Hawaiian monarch took the throne, they declared a vision for Hawaii that the kingdom would be a kingdom of literacy. For today's question, we ask, can you name which Hawaiian monarch declared this vision for Hawaii? Call 808-941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. The first one to get it right wins a reusable HPR tote bag.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from Nereid Hawaii, which supports nonprofits providing affordable housing for families of agricultural workers and retirees, such as the Kunia Village Development Corporation. NereidHawaii.com.
Hurricane Lowell may have passed the islands, but it's still bringing rain our way, both here on Oahu and Kauai, and flash flooding continues to be a concern. This weekend, Star Advertiser reporter Kevin Nodell highlighted a situation with firefighters being asked to do more with these disasters, and their training is a big concern. Good morning, Kevin.
Morning, Catherine.
Yeah, and, you know, I know your coverage this weekend, you know, was underscored by the fact that we lost a firefighter, you know, in a flood not too long ago. And that is just, you know, heartbreaking.
Yeah, you know, it's a situation where I think people expect a lot of our first responders. But it's very dangerous to respond in these conditions, particularly if it's something they don't have a lot of experience with. And you have to remember that while first responders are supposed to respond to any situation in front of them, firefighters are primarily trained to fight fires, and they also are continuing to do their routine calls and regular duties on top of the increasing challenges we're seeing with these storms.
Yes, and HFD, you know, does have a special unit, the search and rescue folks, right, that often assist, you know, when there's a person, you know, out there on the high seas. But they have trained, you know, divers, you know, and rescuers that handle those kinds of things. But yeah, when you have flooded conditions, you know, they have to really be smart about how they respond.
Right, and also high seas is very different than swift water moving through streets and buildings and residential areas where you're trying to look for people or respond to calls and hoping that you have all of the right equipment. And often when you don't have enough time to call for a specialized team.
Yes, and you know, I know that the department took some heat by residents out there when they were in a situation in flooded conditions, and they were, I think the residents were concerned that the firefighters didn't come to their aid immediately.
Right, you're referring to the March 20 Kona Low event. Yeah, there. Famously, Mayor Blangiardi praised the work of first responders at a community meeting, and he took a lot of heat from people who felt that first responders, not just firefighters, but police as well, were not as responsive as they should have been, or in some cases weren't responsive at all, according to some testimonies. I spoke to a family and several neighbors who said that they called out for help to some firefighters as they were stuck for up as long as 20 minutes, maybe longer, in fast-moving waters up around Haleiwa. But even they said they had some sympathy for the idea that maybe these firefighters didn't have the equipment they needed. They noted that after they had gotten to safety, firefighters did move into the neighborhood with an inflatable raft and helped extract several other residents. You know, these are very dangerous conditions, and it's really important that you have the tools that you need if you're going to attempt to save people. Because if you put yourself in danger, and it is inherently dangerous to do so, but if you get lost in the flood as you're trying to save others, then you're creating more challenges for the community and the department and so forth.
And these disasters are becoming more challenging to respond to. So what do they say about training?
Well, each department I talked to says that they have been increasing their training on this, that they are looking to get more flotation devices and make sure that each engine, each firehouse has more training and more equipment to be able to respond. But you know, there's a lot of questions about whether it's enough, whether enough steps have been taken. And you know, obviously, with what we've seen, we've got residents who have questions. And, you know, we have families of firefighters who have questions about whether they're getting enough training and enough equipment to safely respond to these events.
Yes, no, it's a really important issue to be talking about in our community, you know, within the city and county and the other counties as well. But thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you.
We've been hearing from Star Advertiser reporter Kevin Nodell about the continued impacts of Hurricane Lowell.
Support for HPR comes from Ho'olanapua, working to prevent child trafficking through public education about buyer demand and the community's role in reducing exploitation. Resources at ho'olanapua.org.
On the next Fresh Air, author Casey Gerald. NPR named his 2018 memoir, There Will Be No Miracles Here, one of the best books of the year. His new book is called The Great Refusal, A New Vision for Resistance. Join us.
Beginning this afternoon at 3, following On Point.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to Ulupono Initiative.
Honolulu Civil Beat has a story today that has put the spotlight on a critical area of our economy, our business community. Reporter Stuart Yurton joins us with the details. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Catherine.
Yes, so your story is about an upgrade that the state is in the middle of at the Hawaii Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs.
Yes, that's right. It's an upgrade to the what they call the Business Express platform, but users are finding there is nothing quick about the Business Express platform.
And they're spending, what, $2 million for this upgrade?
Yes, $2.1 million upgrading, bringing multiple systems that existed before under one platform, and it is just not working well. The result is weeks-long delays. People are saying 2 months. Maybe to just simply register a business.
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, we already, you know, we're at the bottom of the heap across the country as far as being responsive to businesses, and this just is another nail in the coffin.
It is another sign, yeah. So CNBC, as you pointed out, just recently found Hawaii was 50th among the states as a place to do business, and this is just another sign of what it's like for people. And again, you know, from the user perspective, months-long delays. From the DCCA worker perspective, apparently the system has problems. And there are two types of issues that the people are trying to figure out. One is this just an idiosyncrasy with the program that is creating a problem on our end? We're trying to learn it. And is this something we need to figure out? We're doing something wrong. The other thing is they need to then figure out, well, maybe it's not something we're doing wrong. Maybe it's an actual bug in the system. So then they have to go to the contractor to work out with them, figure out what the bug is. And so it's very difficult for the workers to figure these things out, right? They're not sure if the problem's with them or if it's with the system.
Yeah, but it's no way to run a business when the State Department that's supposed to be helping is hurting.
Not at all. And several commenters have pointed out, and I've had similar experiences myself, that like, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, the system worked pretty well. And I can say just from my experience as a reporter, I routinely am looking up business names and to see who the owners and officers are of particular companies here. And there was a time not long ago when that was having problems. And I couldn't find businesses. It just wasn't working. They seemed to fix that pretty quickly. But this has not been fixed.
Yeah, so you're wondering, is this a technical thing? You know, but I know it is a challenge when you're trying to get different systems to talk to each other. And then I guess they hit the button and everybody's keeping their fingers crossed, but things aren't working like they should be.
Yeah, and there's so many documents. I mean, there are millions of documents that they have on file from different systems. And then also, you know, just the applications are constantly rolling in. They're saying they do 160,000 transactions annually, 200,000 entities that they're licensed and they work with. So it is a lot of information. But again, this is really, for the people having to deal with it, it's very frustrating. And DCCA admits they are having problems and admits that there are bugs that they're trying to find and eliminate.
Have they given us any timetable, any clues?
They haven't. They can't say how many people are backlogged. They can't say how long the backlogs are. Again, we're hearing up to a couple of months. But we just don't have it. And again, I think they're continually really trying to figure this stuff out. But it's a mess.
Yeah, and a concern, particularly if there is a backlog. But, you know, I just think of shades of the city's Department of Planning and Permitting, right? And they were hoping to get that squared away. I mean, they finally have gotten things under control, but let's hope that the DCCA officials can sort this out.
Yeah, let's hope so, because, again, people are they're trying to start new businesses. A lot goes into it. There's a lot of risk. There's money. There's investment. Everything else, and they just can't do it. And this is a necessary piece of it.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Stuart.
Thanks, Catherine.
We've been talking with Honolulu Civil Beat reporter Stuart Yurton. You can find the story online at civilbeat.org. And now it's time for the answer to our backyard quiz. Today we looked at the history of Hawaii's love of reading. In the 19th century, Hawaii had one of the world's leading literacy rates at over 90%, similar to that of Great Britain's urban population. For today's quiz, we asked you which Hawaiian monarch declared their kingdom a kingdom of literacy. The king made that declaration when he ascended to the throne in 1825. And according to Mission House's museum, the king made this a core pillar of his reign, leading to a high demand of books throughout the kingdom. His reign also saw a rapid growth of schools in the kingdom and the Bible translated into the Hawaiian language. That king was Kamehameha III, and the answer for today's question. And congrats to Mindy from Hilo. That's our quiz for today. If you have one, send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Shortfin pilot whales have a misleading name. They're called whales, but they're really a type of dolphin. They're one of the many ocean creatures that call these islands home, and a new study reports that a creature is being targeted by Hawaii's ocean pollution problem. Christy West was the lead researcher from the University of Hawaii at Manoa Health and Stranding Laboratory. She and her team analyzed stranded shortfin pilot whales over the last decade. They found alarming amounts of fishing debris in some of the whales who may have mistaken the floating trash for food. West sat down with HPR's Addis Belai to discuss her team's findings and the questions that her team had to consider.
We had observed three different pilot whales that had stranded over various years in different islands, but all of them shared this really disturbing finding of about 4 to 12 pounds of marine debris in their stomachs. And that is incredibly disturbing to observe in these free-swimming animals in the ocean. Obviously does not belong there and has no positive health impacts for the animals. And so that really led us to try to dig into the question of what type of marine debris are we seeing in pilot whales in Hawaii? And what about other pilot whales in Hawaii? And of course, that's to better understand where the source of this may be so that we can prevent this and better protect these animals.
And shortfin pilot whales are cetaceans. So they're treated like indicator species in Hawaii. What does that really mean?
Yeah, so whales and dolphins are the groups of animals that make up cetaceans, and cetaceans are recognized sentinels really of our ocean health. So they act like canaries in the coal mine, and they can give us early warning signals of things that are really not right in our marine ecosystems. And I think we all recognize that marine debris is a really large global problem. We do see marine debris on our shorelines. We know it's out there in our oceans, but these animals provide us a way to dig a little deeper into what kind of problems it creates for them.
And so what did this study indicate about the health of our ocean ecosystems here in Hawaii?
Yeah, the study actually highlights that marine debris, plastics in our oceans is a really significant problem here in Hawaii, and especially points out that abandoned, lost, or otherwise discarded fishing gear appears to be in really high concentration in our waters compared to other locations in the world. So there have been findings of marine debris in single pilot whales in other global locations, but it's usually really centered around plastic bags. And we did find plastic bags in these three animals. That was our second most common type of debris. But abandoned, lost, otherwise discarded fishing gear, line, netting was the top. And that seems to be really abundant here in Hawaii, maybe because of our proximity to the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. We're on the edge of the North Pacific subtropical gyre. But this study really highlights that type of marine debris as a problem here.
I wanted to kind of go through the main highlights from the study you guys conducted. And one of the first ones was that plastic was found in the stomachs of 23% of stranded Hawaiian short film pilot whales. Do you find this to be representative of the species as a whole? Is it possible that there are more whales out there with this discarded fishing materials in their systems?
Yeah, we don't have the opportunity to examine every whale that dies. And so when we are able to do an examination and an investigation, it provides really valuable data. And so the 23% of pilot whales over a 13-year period that we looked at is higher than we would have expected based on what we know in terms of similar investigations that have been done globally. So that's a higher incident rate of these findings in their stomachs than really anywhere else in the world for this species. So that's one of the really important things from this finding, is it's showing us that this is a really a significant threat to Hawaiian pilot whales when we compare the data to what's known about pilot whales across the globe.
And are you able to maybe get an idea of how they're getting an abundant access to all this lost, discarded material, since it seems to be a problem very specific to Hawaii, which does have a very large fishing industry and things like that?
We have not seen that same level of incidence in other species of dolphins and whales in Hawaii. We do find marine debris in the stomachs of other species, but not at the rate of 23%. And also what was really striking in these cases was the volume. This is a large amount of material, not an odd bottle cap and a small piece of plastic. It was a lot of material in all three whales. So that suggests that there's something that makes pilot whales as a species more vulnerable than our other species of dolphins and whales that are swimming around in our waters. And we suspect that might be related to their diet. So pilot whales forage almost entirely on different species of squid. They don't really eat fish or have other contributors. So we're speculating, but perhaps they're confusing squid with these masses of debris, and that's how they are initially maybe more vulnerable than some of the other species to them. But that's speculation at this point.
Kind of related to what you just mentioned about the volume of this debris found in the whales, another big highlight of your studies was that the whales ingested about almost 6,000 to 35,000 pieces of debris per whale. What kind of impacts does it have on an animal of this size?
So those numbers are telling us that in one animal, we were able to count over 35,000 pieces of plastic. So some of those are really tiny, like the size of a pencil eraser, but they, you know, added up to 35,000. The majority of the items we found in the three whales were actually pretty big, like the size of an iPad. And so that accounted for 70%. So most were big and large. So imagine this like a really good size shopping bag or two. It's quite a bit of material in each whale's stomach. And so even though in these cases, that did not cause an obstruction that directly killed the whales, which it can, they are displacing good food in order to swim around with these large amounts of debris in there. That means they are not getting good food that would instead take up room in that stomach. So that is not good for their long-term health and nutrition when we have that displacement, because that debris is not passing out of the stomach. It's there forever, basically. And then I think we're all somewhat aware that we hear more and more about the chemicals as plastic breaks down not being good for our health or whales' health. So they're also subjected to those increasingly harmful chemical burdens that are going to be within the body because of the long-term really impact of having this debris in their stomach. So what that practically means for me is whenever I go to the beach, I bring a recyclable bag with me and I bring stuff off the beach that's along that shoreline, because I know that with the next high tide, some of those items can go back. And as you can probably imagine, some days my bag is overfull and I prioritize the netting and the line, knowing that is now a type of marine debris that is especially problematic for these whales in our waters.
For your team, what is it like to be the people on the front lines making these discoveries and realizing what these results mean for both the marine animals and us?
Yeah, it's really rewarding. It's really hard work. So this study, for example, spanned more than 7 years, and we know that over 25 people contributed to the data collection. So this was an incredible effort, and it somewhat is a labor of love when we think about the amount of work to get this data, but it is really rewarding to be able to address some of these questions and try to focus in on what can we understand from these investigations that will really help us to make a difference, right? To make a difference for these animals, to make a difference out there. And marine debris is a global problem that can just feel overwhelming. And I think this study tells us a little bit more about the problem that it is here locally for these whales, and certainly what types of debris are a problem, and therefore we can better target those efforts to try to make things better.
For people who find this problem overwhelming or maybe are unfamiliar with how to digest something like a scientific study, how do you suggest that they continue to remain educated, or do you have any advice for people looking to learn more about this?
Yeah, for sure. Getting just more actively involved in any efforts to reduce plastics from entering our oceans, as well as that daily choice that we each make when we choose to use a single-use plastic item, there is a chance that's going to end up on a street, and then a storm is going to come and it's going to end up in our storm drains, out to the stream and into the ocean. And so we individually can make a difference by just those daily choices in terms of reducing those single-use plastics. And we did see those in the study. It's just that the abandoned fishing gear was the number one item in the whale stomachs. And then just reading up on what kind of collective global efforts were, if we get more of a groundswell of interested people, they can be more powerful in terms of changing the outlook for what we see out in our oceans in terms of marine debris.
That was University of Hawaii Professor Christy West talking with HPR's summer intern Addis Belai. They were discussing a new study on short fin pilot whales. Interested in learning more? Check our website, hawaiipublicradio.org, later today. Well, that's a wrap for us today. Tomorrow we plan to have more on the damage caused from the wind and the rain brought in by Hurricane Lowell. Got a storm story to share? Call our talkback line, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can find the conversation on our website or as a podcast on Spotify or Apple. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.